This is Radio 4. And now, Limpets Hour.
Hello. And in today's Limpets Hour, we'll be looking at the latest limpet fashions. And we'll be hearing episode 45 of Limpet Passion by an elderly limpet who likes health foods. First, though, this winter's fashions. June. Thank you, Sue. Well, the big news this winter is that shells are out. Instead, Dior has gone for the shell look. Susan Small has also chosen the more shell-like shells, including colourful accessories like wraparound shells, chunky shells, and full-length flared culotte cut wide above the knee in the French manner, but shells really. So there we have it, a load of mollusks. But now, episode 45 of Limpet Passion, read by someone who once made a terrible mistake on a much more important program.
He held her in his strong, manly suckers. Your eyes are like limpet pools, he breathed, and your smile warms the cockles of my cockles. Suddenly, he felt as if a huge explosion had knocked all the breath out of him, and all at once he realized his true feelings for her. Oh, darling, limpet mine, he said. But it was too late. She had gone off.
Oh. Well, limpet's hour seems to have ended some 58 minutes early today, so in the meantime, we present The Burkis Way.
Apologize for the loss of actors in this edition of The Burkis Way. We're doing our best to rectify the problem. In the meantime, the program will continue in sound effects only. Say, we can now return the actors to you. The BBC would like to apologize for the inconvenience of this little disruption, which had absolutely nothing to do with money. At all. Bit.
And prompt fast BBC payments are the subject of this week's Burkis Way to Dynamic Living, because this week we look at the unknown. In just 28 minutes, Joe Kendall, Chris Emmett, Nigel Reese and Fred Harris will teach you absolutely all there is to be known about the unknown. Nothing. So stay tuned now for lesson 11 in our weird and uncanny series of correspondence courses, Journey into the Unknown, the Burkis Way. Hello. Well, as this program is the last in the series, but eight, we're devoting it to a very special and highly complex subject, the supernatural.
And we'll be answering for you such tantalizing questions as, when shouldn't you lay a ghost?
When it's under 16.
Can black magic be harmful to your health?
Not so long as you steer clear of the soft centers.
And what does it mean when you wake up in the morning with two little red teeth marks on your neck?
Mind your own business.
We'll also be finding out what it's actually like to die. Unless we get some better jokes.
Since very early times, people have believed in the idea of reincarnation or the transmigration of cells after death.
But how do you actually go about being reincarnated? Well, for a start, you'll have to attend an interview. Come in. Ah, hello. Take a seat, please. You're the candidate for reincarnation, are you?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Now, I must make sure you're completely dead, first of all.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh! Right, well, that's over. Now then, what did you want to be reincarnated as?
As a buffalo, please.
A buffalo, right. You were a buffalo in your previous life, were you?
No, I worked in a garage.
As a buffalo?
No.
Near a buffalo?
No.
Oh, well, this is rather tricky. You see, we do generally like candidates to have some experience of their desired life.
Well, how do I get the experience?
Well, by being a buffalo, of course.
You mean I can't be a buffalo until I've been one already?
Oh, you're Jewish, are you? Oh, well, I don't think we could make you a Jewish buffalo. It's quite unheard of. Besides, they look awful in skullcaps.
No, I'm not Jewish.
No, of course you're not. All right, then, let's have a look at your legs.
They're quite hairy. Look.
Not enough, I'm afraid.
What, hairs?
No, legs. You see, I knew you weren't suited for it the moment you came in. And now, to cap it all, you've only got three legs. You're quite unsuitable. Quite unsuitable, I'm afraid. I just can't take the risk of making a garage mechanic a buffalo and having you gallop off in the middle of a stampede, plunge under another buffalo and start draining its stump.
Oh, please.
That's out of the question. Anyway, look at it like this. In the order of things, buffaloes come pretty low down the list. You know, near toads, sloths, eels, and the bachelors. Wouldn't like it.
I would. I'd love to be a buffalo. Look, watch me. Watch this.
Don't do that, please. We've just had the carpet cleaned. Look, I've got plenty of other vacancies. A deaf chartered accountant, a civil servant who picks his nose, a tramp with a hernia. Don't any of those appeal to you at all?
Look, if I've got to take something other than a buffalo, at least make sure it's not a human. Anything rather than another human.
Oh, well, let's see then. Ah, you're in luck. I've got just the thing. It's a pipe.
Oh, I'll take it.
Excellent. Off you go then, Magnus. Good luck.
Oh, good luck, yes. Now, that raises an interesting point because... Luck.
There will now be a short intermission.
Coming soon to this intermission, 20th Century Burgess presents horror films for the nervous, pictures that you may find a wee bit on the uncomfortable side, but not all that much.
Thrill through Jules Verne's nerve-shattering 20,000 bits of seed under the sea. Crawl with the unseen horrors of Edgar Allan Poe's The Loaf and the Pendulum. Scream at the terrors of I Married a Man from Outer Hackney.
Blackie's horror films for the nervous provide a unique experience in slightly disagreeable motion pictures. Witness the blood-curdling Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
No, keep away.
Oh, come here, Butchbox, I want you.
Oh,
I want you.
No.
Oh, come on, come on.
No.
Oh.
Good God, Charles, look at that horrible red-stained mouth. The insatiable way he's sucking. He's pinched her strawberry lolly.
From the people who brought you The Fall of the Trousers of Usher, Wilderness and the Puddle, and that spine-tingling epic, The Curse of the Mummy.
Oh! It's... You smell sauce down your shirt.
Sorry, Mummy.
Watch if you dare the nerve-wracking Sweetie Todd, the Demon Barber.
That
That's some dandruff you've got there, Mr. Smedley.
Yes, the theatre management can accept no liability for any member of the audience who says, "Dear me," or "Well, I never," during this performance. Burkis Horror Films for the Nervous, coming soon to this intermission.
Hello, and welcome back to our course on the unknown. Well, with us now we have a distinguished expert in life after death. He's head of the practical seance department at Cambridge University, Professor Leibniz Ectoplasm. Professor Ectoplasm, in your expert opinion, is life possible after death? Give one knock for yes, two knocks for no. So there we are. Yes, yes, says Professor Ectoplasm. Another man who certainly ought to know a thing or two about the subject, but unfortunately doesn't, is Eric Pode of Croydon.
Good evening.
Mr. Croydon, what are you doing?
I'm waving to my wife.
This is the radio.
Oh, sorry, they look very much alike, don't they?
Mr. Croydon, I understand you come from a background of the black arts.
That's right, yeah. My father was magical by profession.
How do you mean?
It was a miracle he ever got a job.
And I believe your house was possessed by evil fiends.
Yes, Lewisham Borough Council. I got all these off Ken Dodd, you know.
It's all right. I shouldn't think he's missed them. Mr. Croydon, I gather you have the power of levitation.
Correct, yes.
And anything you touch immediately starts to rise.
Correct, yes.
Right, well, I think that's about as far as I wish to see you. Mr. Croydon, thank you, and get out.
A pleasure. Well, it would have been if I...
A large number of books have, of course, been written on the subject of the unknown. One of our women correspondents, for example, frequently curls up with Wheatley and Asimov, although sometimes he curls up with them and doesn't. So, let's examine for a minute some of the latest publications on the market.
Good evening, and tonight on this program is way above your level. We talk to Eric von Kondrick, author of such best-selling books as Spaceships of the Gods, some more of me, Spaceships of the Gods, and It Shouldn't Happen to Spaceships of the Gods. Now, Professor von Kondrick, one of the most interesting things about your series of books in which you claim that mankind is descended from beings from outer space is that they all seek to prove exactly the same thing using exactly the same evidence. Now, why is this?
You think they're all the same? Have you read them all?
Well, yes, I have. That's why I...
So what does it matter if they're all the same if you read them all? Have you
read them all? I see. You are only in it for the money. Does this mean that you don't actually believe what you say? That man is descended from extraterrestrial life forms?
How can I not believe it? The evidence is incontrovertible.
And do you use that same evidence again in your new book coming out next week?
No. I use entirely new evidence that I have manufactured. I discovered. discovered over the last year.
To prove that man is descended from the stars.
No. To prove that man is descended from the ants.
Ants? You mean that this displaces your theory that he came from the stars?
Oh, no. They just aimed at different sectors of the market. this one is directed at ant enthusiasts, you see.
But this is incredible.
That's the point. It's incredible. I've got a new kiddies book coming out, too. That is based on incontrovertible proof that mankind is descended from little fluffy white kittens. And also a nasty little number for lonely housefrau, proving that mankind is descended from Sacre de Stel. Oh, a lovely chapter on primeval slime in that book.
what was that?
And I like that. That the ant book will get me a new yacht. The fluffy kitten book will buy me a couple of those rather nice Lagondas.
Something's going wrong.
Harry, Bob, come straight.
Yeah?
I am Ulam of the race of your forefathers from the galaxy of Smegmon. We come for our cup.
Cup? Sugar, what cup?
Don't try and mess me about, Professor. They don't call me Ulam. For nothing, you know.
My God, this has got to be the most incredible sight the world has ever seen. An enormous alien monster has smashed his way into the building here. And it's indescribable. It's absolutely indescribable. It's at moments like this that I really wish I worked in television because... Because to be honest, they pay a bit better. It certainly seems to be a more glamorous life. You walk into the bar at television center, it's a whole different world, isn't it? And just because you work in radio, they treat you like some sort of country bumpkin. But I know that if I did work in television, I'd still keep up with my old friends in radio, you see, because I still respect radio, because I think it's a very important and valid medium. It's just that I would rather work in television, that's all.
I only wish
that you could see this. Ulam has picked up Professor Conflict now and is taking him out to the gleaming white spaceship, standing like a proud tower in the remains of Langham Place. And there aren't any of those slobs from television getting a look in here. They're probably all standing round in a smart little television centre bar, drinking gin and tonics. While out here on radio, we're witnessing history in the making. Only you can't actually see it. And wait a minute. Something is happening. What a turn up. There's a positive tidal wave of very determined looking ants sweeping up Oxford Street. And they look as if they mean business, all right. Oh, eat your heart out, Richard Baker. You're not getting any of this. And here come the fluffy white kittens now. Yes, they're moving in with their business knowledge. Oh, my God. I think the worst is yet to come. My God, yes, the very worst. This is it. This is the end.
Raindrops keep falling on my raindrops keep falling.
I'm sorry, we seem to have had a slight technical hitch there. What you've just heard was, in fact, just an imaginary interview and did not actually take place. In fact, we would like to emphasize that particularly imaginary were the remarks made by the imaginary interviewer, which seemed to suggest that there might be any feelings of bitterness or resentment between radio and television staff. In fact, television staff only get paid very slightly more than radio staff. Though we admit that there is a slight difference, and we in radio also have a perfectly good and worthwhile bar for having a nice drink and a bit of a chat in, and there's nothing to complain about at all in that area, even if some of the lino is a bit scruffy at the edges. Now we return you to the last few minutes of The Burkis Way to Dynamic Living.
Well, I'm not all that worried about the money in radio, are you?
Well, I wouldn't mind a dress at Aunt's.
Don't know. Thought you looked quite nice in that barrel.
But the knot hole at the front isn't really big enough. In fact, I'd rather have them. What?
I think they're back.
What? Oh. And so we come to the end of our program on the unknown. And we finish off with a more detailed look at one couple's experience of the land of the dead in the Burkis Way in action.
Since the beginning of time, people everywhere have been fascinated by great romances. Lovers like Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor have brought pleasure to millions the world over, which explains why they look so exhausted. This is the story of Orpheus and Eurydice Sproat. Orpheus Sproat had met his wife Eurydice one year in a little nightclub in Paris, which was a bit embarrassing as he told her he was on a business trip to Carlisle. Now they were renting a council slum in East London, and for Orpheus, times were extremely hard.
The little hand's on Mickey Mouse, and the other hand's on Donald Duck.
So what does that mean?
It means it's time to stop playing with your toys and go to bed. Honestly, Orpheus, when are you going to get a job?
You're right. It is time I got some work. I know. Why didn't I think of it before? Orpheus was a singer. A singer, don't you understand?
You mean?
Yes. I'll get a job as a sewing machine.
But when that job fell through, Orpheus Sprode decided to sing after all. He took lessons from Tom Jones on how to make it really big. And before long, got his first spot on television's number one talent show, New Embarrassments.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of New Embarrassments. And our first act tonight is a very funny club comedian from Liverpool. Let's have a very big, warm welcome for talented impressionist Jerry No Hope.
Betty.
Jerry No Hope there of Liverpool. John, read it all off a card. How would this boy go down in your nightclub?
Marion looks good and has a fine pair of jugglers. Jugglers look good, and I think if there were...
Well, while John's answering that, let's move on to our next act, a singer from East London, ladies and gentlemen, Orpheus Sprode.
Ahem. Oh, for the wings... For the wings of the dark...
And it was at this point that Orpheus received the final crushing blow to his ambitions as a star. He won the show. The following day, he decided that there was only one way to raise money for himself and Eurydice, insure his life for £1 million, and then kill himself.
Right, here I am, standing on top of this bridge, talking to myself. In a thoroughly unnatural fashion. Now, just tie this heavy anvil round my neck with this rope, and then throw it over. Damn, must have made the rope too long. I'll just have to blow my brains out with this gun. Missed. Now there's only one thing for it. I shall have to blow myself up.
And later that day in Orpheus's bedroom...
Now, I've wired up the explosives. Now all I have to do is press this plunger. Hang on, there's somebody outside playing a sound effect of footsteps. I'd better put this detonator underneath the bed. Mother! Mother!
Oh, I don't know how to tell you this.
What mother?
It's Eurydice.
Oh. What are you trying to tell me? Come on out with it, don't hold it back.
She's got a job in Crossroads.
I can't believe it.
A few people can. It's true. She signed on this morning, Orpheus. He's gone to the land of the dead. No man returns alive.
Then I shall follow her down into that place of lost souls and bring her back.
Oh, no, Orpheus, no.
And fired with a burning passion for his loved one, Orpheus descended from the land of the living to ATV. When he crossed through the purgatory of celebrity squares until he came across the treacherous nether regions of Meg Richardson.
So, this is Crossroads.
the land of the dead. Can my darling Eurydice be found in this land of zombie-like creatures?
All right. Come on, lads. Come along. We've got just 10 minutes left before lunch, and that's just about time to rehearse the next 35 shows. All right, lads. Eurydice, where have you been? We've been waiting for hours.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got held up in them boring.
Hurry up.
Eurydice, my love.
What you want, mister? I've got a tray of tea and biscuits to delivery again now. I can't stand around waiting talking to you. I'm always delivering tea and biscuits in this
Eurydice,
place. I don't do anything else.
What have they done to you?
Oh, no, I've got to go on with my tea and biscuits.
Oh, Eurydice, can you ever forgive me for the wrongs I have done? I'll get you out of this land of the dead if it's the last thing I do.
And a day later, back in the land of the living...
Orpheus. I still don't know how you persuaded the director to release me.
I had to do him a little favour.
What sort of favour?
Well, I don't think we need to go into that. The main thing is that you are free, my love. Just think that I was going to commit suicide. I'd even got the detonator. Well, that's all past now. Come, let's celebrate your release, my darling. Let's have an early night.
Very well, Orpheus.
Come into bed. Oh.
What perishing twit left a rosy detonator under the bed, then?
I'm sorry, Laura, I forgot all about
it. We'll just have to drive back to Germany.
Would you like to be explosive in bed? Would you really like to set women alight? Then apply now to the Burkis Joan of Arc correspondence course. Carol, Joe Kendall, Chris Elliott, Nigel Rees, and Fred Harris. You too could attract women like flies, providing you don't mind women like flies. All you have to do is send off for these and other L jokes to Andrew Marshall and David Renwick, or for additional jokes to John Lloyd and Douglas Adams. If you'd like to drop into our showrooms and browse around producer Simon Brett of Stephanie, then feel free. Any more and it'll cost you. See you next week, folks, and happy, dynamic, loving... Thank you.